Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Neil Garfield Show, a presentation sponsored by www.livinglies.wordpress.com, GTC Honored, and the law firm of Garfield, Kelly & White, serving all 50 states with news and analysis of the latest bank scams against borrowers, homeowners, consumers, and investors, and providing legal representation throughout Florida. This program is for general information only. It is not a solicitation for services or legal representation and should never be used as a substitute for advice from a licensed professional. And now, here's world-renowned financial expert, attorney, and blogger, Neil Garfield.
Hi, this is Neil Garfield, and this is Thursday, August 28, 2014. I'm broadcasting live from Boynton Beach, Florida, brought to you by the Living Lies blog, GTC Honors, and GAR, the Garfield firm with offices in Tallahassee and Fort Lauderdale. And, of course, this show is brought to you because of donations to the Living Lies blog from listeners just like you. Those of you who joined me last week heard a question from one of the listeners, which I've been getting with increasing frequency, which is, why don't you do a seminar on voir dire and cross-examination? So my answer was, we're in process on that, and we are. And we will be doing two seminars, one a two-hour seminar by phone, and the other a full-day seminar with interactive exercises in Fort Lauderdale. The full-day one will be voir dire plus cross-examination. Yes, there is a difference. And joining me in that seminar will be Patrick Gianta, who I have named as the senior litigator for Living Lies and who I have been working closely with, and he's been doing some outstanding work on behalf of clients located in Broward County on Federal Highway. How do you know that? That's the purpose of voir dire examination. And let me give a shout to the former leader of seminars for lawyers, Arthur Younger, who died some years ago. His tapes and materials on voir dire, expert witnesses, cross-examination, and other elements of on-your-feet lawyering are still the best available. I understand that those are available at times on eBay and perhaps other sources, but if you can lay your hands on those tapes and some of his seminar materials, those of you who are practicing law in the courtroom on a continual basis will find his work to be invaluable. I also recommend Dombrock's book on trial objections. It's a short book, easy to locate things. I think that that particular author really focuses in on the main issues that you need to know about when to make an objection, how to make it, and when you've waived it, which is one of the principal problems that I see in trial law as it relates to all cases. But, of course, I've been focusing in the last 7 years on foreclosure and mortgage litigation. The competency of a witness to testify, the right of a witness to testify, the right of a party to use that witness to testify is based on four elements. that he take an oath, and believe it or not, that does make a difference to a lot of people, that he had or she had personal perception through one of the senses of the body, hearing, seeing, smelling, whatever it is, it had to be personal. The ability to remember what they saw without looking at paper, there is a provision for allowing somebody to refresh their memory by looking at, but they should be able to remember things about the facts that they are testifying, which they say they saw, they say they heard, and they say they know. And lastly is the ability to communicate it. That usually is not a problem. Remember that hearsay applies to almost everything that is going on in foreclosure litigation now. The plaintiff in Florida will put on a professional witness who is the corporate representative of fill in the blank, servicer, trustee, trust, etc. This is a witness who really knows nothing about the loan, has no job in the bank or other type of entity that might be involved other than testifying. By the very nature of that, by questioning the witness as to who he gets or whom she gets a paycheck from, you can identify the fact that the witness is a witness for one particular entity, and then go into what particular things the witness perceived preparation for what they intend to testify to and what they can remember. So if a witness says, for example, that that there is a deficiency in receipt of money on the account, the overall question is, how do you know that? And that's what governs voir dire. It often happens that the attorney may step over the line, either intentionally for effect or unintentionally, where he is trying to impeach the witness or otherwise refute the witness is saying. Voir dire is much more focused than that. Voir dire is to see and to say. That's the English translation of the Latin. And voir dire basically is used to determine whether or not the witness is competent to testify as to the issues that they are being called upon to testify. If you don't invoke your right to voir dire examination and you reserve it for cross-examination, terribly, you'll probably be held to have waived a number of your questions, and it'll be much harder to strike the testimony of a witness who was merely giving voice to words and numbers on pieces of paper that he never prepared. Those pieces of paper are reports generated from a variety of sources specifically for the purpose of being seen in court and are not ordinarily business records that were made at or near the time that a transaction occurred. In addition, the witness will often say that he knows that the figures are good. They have a boarding process that verifies everything. Well, how is the verification performed? Does the witness really know that verification was done on this particular loan? Does the witness really know anything about the original loan? Does the witness really know anything about transfers or assignments or sales or endorsements of the loan? Does the witness know whether or not the lender on the note and mortgage actually loaned money? The answer is usually no. And that question of do you know, or how do you know that, is key to voir dire. By breaking down the areas of actual knowledge of the witness, you will frequently end up with zero. And then, of course, the judge will have a problem on his hands as to what to do with that. In cross-examination, by contrast, you are obviously seeking to impeach or contradict the witness as to what he has already testified to on direct examination on questioning by the attorney for the bank or servicer or trustee or whoever it is that says that they have brought the claim as a holder on behalf of the creditor. By the way, tomorrow morning, if you look at my blog, you will see some issues relating to the claim of being a holder and the relationship between that and some constitutional issues of due process, where presumptions are used to arrive at conclusions that are in direct conflict with the facts, even as pled in the foreclosure lawsuit. If you want information about the seminars or anything about what I'm talking about here or need some assistance, you can call 954-495-9867, or on the West Coast, you can call 520-405-1688. We'll get to questions in a minute here, but I wanted to give you an overview of what we're going to be doing in the upcoming seminars, and we're going to try to keep the costs as low as possible and limit attendance so that we can actually have some meaningful discussion in both the short seminar and the longer one. We will be applying for CLE credits. I have had no problem getting that before. So the two-hour one, I guess, will be two credits. The full-day one, the last time, was 9.5 credits and covers ethics and a variety of areas of the law, which includes, of course, real estate, securities, commercial transactions, real estate transactions, title, and, of course, securitization of loans, which I have arrived at the conclusion that most claims of securitization are false. So we'll be doing an overview of foreclosure litigation in Florida and several other states, including non-judicial states on the West Coast and the East Coast. I will be talking to you about the need for having copies of actual case law and even memoranda supporting your line of questioning and voir dire and cross-examination. And what I call the three rules for questioning, which are my three rules. One, know why you want to inquire. Two, listen to the answer. Three, follow up and comment. All too often, I have seen attorneys stand at the lectern with a list of questions in front of them, and they ask the questions in order, and they don't listen to the answer, and it comes off very disjointed, and very often there's an answer there that could be followed up and commented upon, which would prove your narrative for the case. And we cover what to ask and when to ask it. Just because you can ask it doesn't mean you should ask it. That comes from having a specific goal and strategy and narrative that you've prepared for the case. And getting traction with the presiding judge, you have to take into account that the judges, for the most part, while they are deeply disturbed by what they're seeing, still believe that there were loans given to borrowers and that those loans are the subject matter of the case that they are hearing, and they are not prepared to accept without a giant shove the fact that the actual loan is not in front of them. Developing a narrative, very important for your opening and closing statement, which you should make, and which you should follow as much as possible where the evidence and responses of the witness allow you to go in the direction of your narrative and having appropriate witnesses there. And there's also the question of when your client shows up, because sometimes they use the homeowner as a way of getting the note and mortgage in, and the homeowner doesn't necessarily need to be there for that. And then there's impeaching the witness before he or she gets started with the voir dire questions that shows that they know nothing, they've seen nothing, and they are qualified to speak about nothing. And finally, we will talk about preparing your own witnesses for voir dire questions and cross-examination questions. These are things that are not often done in the rush of foreclosure litigation, but I can tell you from personal experience and watching the lawyers who are successful in this area that they do prepare their witnesses and they do prepare themselves and they do prepare a narrative and they do develop the specific goals and strategies for that particular case. Don't assume that all cases are the same. They're not. All cases have some wrinkle in them that will be different than another case that you have tried, and certainly different from other cases that the judge has seen. And it's to point out those differences in your questioning of the corporate representative of the party being used for testimony at trial. And I note that the reason I phrased it that way is that you often have a trust who is handing off the note to maybe a trustee, and the trustee hands off the note to a servicer, he then says it's the holder, which creates the implication that the trust actually owns the loan. And the party who is actually on the stand, the person who is on the stand testifying, is some professional witness who is used as the corporate representative of an entity that now claims to be the new servicer or the new trustee and has no knowledge of any of the transactions that transpired before and up to and including the alleged default and the alleged acceleration. And before I take the first question, I just want to tell you that there is a growing unease on the judiciary, where decisions are coming down that say that the statute of limitations doesn't mean what you think it means. So if your strategy is to get a case dismissed and under the theory that they can't bring it again for new payments that are due, you might be in for a nasty surprise. Statute of limitations is moving in the judiciary in the direction of the minority view, which does not put a final stamp on the litigation. It allows for continuing lawsuits on new payments that are due. So be careful about that. Judge Marino down in Miami just issued an opinion last few days about that. I know a number of people are using the statute of limitations as something to rest their case upon. I think that is dangerous if you don't understand more fully the claims of securitization. Well, I've used up a lot of the time here. I will try to elicit some questions here, see what I can do. Area code 303, first three digits 755. Do you have a question? All right, then we will go to area code 305, first three digits 607. 305-607. Do you have a question? Well, my little console here says you have a question. Maybe you weren't able to get to the phone on time. Then we have area code 239, first three digits 434. Do you have a question? Well, we seem to be having a home run here. We'll go now to 650-793. Area code 650, first three digits 793. Do you have a question? Well, I certainly hope this thing is working. Area code 908, first three digits 938. Do you have a question?
Neil?
Yes.
Hi, Neil.
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, does 16 USC exclude Uetta and eSign?
Okay, you're breaking up a little on my end, so could you state that again, please?
Does 16 USC Section 7003 exclude Uetta and eSign, which are used for with MERS, transferring assignments?
The answer is that I used to have a law professor who referred to the golden chicken of law. I think that the issue of MERS is falling into the golden chicken of law on the bench. They're not quite saying it's Donald Duck, but they're not quite saying that it's anything else. My view is that the use of MERS as the holder of the mortgage or the named mortgagee or the named beneficiary on a deed of trust is completely void and of no effect, and neither is any assignment from it. To argue properly, most judges will give you traction on that, but there is usually identified a lender And that's where the meat of the case is. If you can prove that the lender is also a nominee, then you have Donald Duck and Goofy on the mortgage or the deed of trust, which means you have nobody, which means that there is no mortgagee, which means that the mortgage cannot be enforced. But in order to get to that point, you have to wade through the whole issue of the possessor of a note and the holder of a note and the holder with rights to enforce and the holder in due course. So I gave you a roundabout answer because the issue is far from clear, and it varies even with the same judge depending upon the presentation that is made. So that's unfortunately the best answer I can give you. Foreclosure litigation is really in motion now, and there are changes that are happening almost daily, many of them in favor of the borrower, but not all of them. And it's still true, especially on the Rocket docket, that a lawyer who is not well prepared for trial, or even if he is well prepared for trial, has the statistics against him in terms of winning. But he does have the option and the responsibility for creating an excellent record on appeal, which can be done. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. And we'll try to do a quick one here. Area code 714, first three digits, 785.
Yeah, hi, Neil. Yes, I do.
Yes.
Okay, I'll make it quick. I got a response from Green Tree Financial, my newest servicer,
yes,
to my QWR. They came back with copies, with a three-page letter, and then with copies of the mortgage and the note. None of the endorsements were there that would match the what the attorney the in a hearing 2 months ago that the attorney gave me of recent assignments. So they don't match. Next, there was some paperwork included with QWR response saying that they don't know who the beneficiary is. They say that Fannie Mae is the owner of the note. That's it. And that, but they don't know who the beneficiary is. Is there any way to use that against them in the trial or a memorandum?
Yes, there are many ways to use those things against them, and I recommend that you do so. The more questions that arise as to ownership, the more they have to prove something in court. And certainly if a recent note and mortgage provided to you by the mortgagor conflicts with what the lawyer has in court, you've got the... With that, I have to say I'll see you next week, and thank you for joining me.
Thanks for listening to our broadcast. We hope that you tell your friends about us and let them know that there is hope and help in this financial crisis. Tune in every week to The Neil Garfield Show for free information and advice, and visit our blog daily at The Living Lies Blog. We provide support services, the latest strategies, analysis, expert consultations, testimony, and declarations to use in your battle against the largest economic crime in human history. For information concerning Neil, the team at Living Lies, or the law firm, go to www.livinglies.wordpress.com or call 520-405-1688. The opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the host and should not be attributed to any other person or entity.